Fisheries to order at approximately 10:20. I'd like to welcome everyone to the hearing today. For the record, at the committee table, we have Representative Munoz, Representative Book, Representative Johnson, Representative Millett, myself, Chair Edgman, and I expect that Vice Chair Keller will be arriving any moment. Oh, there he is. Morning.
I apologize.
Meeting West. As always, we ask everyone to keep an eye on their cell phones and please put them on silent if you would. The purpose of today's meeting will be to bring up House Bill 46 for a second a hearing, and we do have the bill sponsor in the audience. I understand that we have Lynn Kent, who's DEC's Director of Water Quality, on the line for any questions. And just to let everyone know that public testimony is still open on the bill, so we will attempt to take any public testimony that might be either here in the committee room or online. I'd like the record to also reflect that Representative Kawasaki has just arrived. And before we get things going, I would like to ask Representative Millett if she had a point to make to the committee.
As soon as Representative Seaton is seated, Mr.
Will the bill sponsor please come to the table, please?
Uh-oh.
There are some good-looking people at this committee.
I love you.
Now what?
That's good. I know they're considering fishing.
And therein lies the difficulty of being a committee chair, because you've got eight captains on the table, or seven, or whatever it is.
I'm not sure. I think this one swept the bill, Chair.
For those in the listening audience, we just played a prank on Mr. Seaton by all donning a copy of the cap that he wears.
Would that be a copy cap?
That's right. So with that, Representative Seaton, welcome to the committee, and thank you for coming forward, and if you would you please sort of walk the committee once again through the bill, or at least give a general synopsis of the purpose of the bill, given that we last heard it, I think it was March 31 of last year, which was just a one hearing, and with an agreement that we would come back and address some sort of outstanding issues that were tied to the bill. And with that, Paul, you want to start, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. I appreciate you hearing the bill today. And again, just to reiterate what a mixing zone is, you know, people can basically discharge as much water as they want as long as it meets the water quality standards of the state of Alaska. If the water that they're discharging does not meet the water quality standards, they can apply for a mixing zone permit, which allows a area in a stream or a freshwater body that would allow for dilution of that, so that at the edge of the mixing zone, then it will meet the water quality standards. Now, there are some restrictions on that, and one is that what's being put out in a river or stream can only be as long, mixing zone can only be as long as it would take for that amount of effluent to totally mix with the entire volume of the river. And we do have some cases in which we have mixing zones, as you heard in previous testimony, that are mile and a half long. And so in some cases we have some mixing zones that are pretty large. But that's what a mixing zone is. It's an area where the water that's being discharged does not meet the water quality standards, but at the edge of that mixing zone, then it will, the water from the discharge mixed with the water from the river or the lake will meet the water quality standards of the state of Alaska. And the current regulations, this bill has three components. The first one is that it would go back to the pre-2002 understanding of a mixing zone in a spawning area, and a spawning area is an area over time that got changed through regulation to an understanding of an area was only an area when salmon were spawning there, or when fish were actually spawning. And so there came this idea of a temporal, instead of identifying the spawning areas on all the charts and all the stream patterns of the state of Alaska of where spawning takes place, it was also temporal as to when they were laying their eggs. So that would reverse that and say a spawning area is the gravel beds where these nests occur. Also wanted to reiterate again that this is not for broadcast spawners, for fish that broadcast eggs into the water and they drift into the water column. This only takes place for those that build actual nests. So those are the spawning area that's covered under the mixing zone bill. The other section of the bill is a right to know bill, and that, you know, these have been successful in health and social health forums across the United States, and it doesn't matter whether you're looking at a asbestos or some other contaminant, and people have the right to know what's in their workplace. This is the right to know for people of the state of Alaska, so we know what's going into our streams and rivers. And there are reporting requirements right now under the EPA, under the previous EPA rules, and there are reporting requirements under the mixing zone permits that are granted now, and they're different for wastewater versus a mining discharge, those kind of things, as to when the samples are taken. But there's monitoring that's required in both kinds of permits. What this does is it clarifies it and will make those amounts of discharges easily accessible by the public on the website of DEC. And the reason for this is, you know, Freedom of Information Act, this is public information that's submitted, but it's not easily accessible. And so over time, we want the public to be able to know what is being put into their rivers and their fishing habitat. And then finally, the law is looking at a wastewater sewage lagoons. These are commercially operated sewage lagoons, and when currently the law doesn't give the public a right to comment and even know when there's an expansion. And this was specifically, there was a case down in my district where there was a 1,500 gallon per day area, and then that was increased to 6,000 gallons a day next to a residential area. The public never knew about it. The permit was granted. So this part of the bill says that if there is an expansion of a commercially, of a sewage lagoon, then that's over 50% of the original size, then DEC would notify the public, the surrounding folks, and they would have a chance to comment on that expansion of the permit, just as if they were going in for an original permit. So those are the policies in the bill. There was a letter from DEC, and you have three amendments that are before you that respond to those conditions in that letter. Do you want me to quickly go over those, Mr. Chairman?
Over the amendments?
Yes, the three amendments, just so everybody knows.
If you would, please.
The first one, which is very simple, it just inserts the word commercially operated on page 3, line 24, to clarify that the sewage lagoon is a commercially operated sewage lagoon. It's not a home septic tank or anything like that, or a private party. The second amendment is to page 3, line 21, and this is responding to DEC's letter of February 13th, and it defines a useful life. There was a question of what did useful life mean, because there's a grandfather clause for the useful life of a facility. And then the third amendment, which is to page 3, line 5, is just inserting that or for an area where spawning was ongoing at the time of initial authorization, if that authorization occurred more than 5 years prior to the effective date of the bill. And this is responding to DEC's concern that there were some village sewage systems that were discharging into areas that had been known as a spawning area, And so this puts them into the grandfather as well. What we have in the grandfather clause for spawning areas is basically if they're, if you have a facility or a discharge and it later gets invaded or by salmon and they start, or other species, and they start spawning there, you wouldn't reclassify that as now spawning area. So it protects a facility that has a discharge at, if it gets invaded by fish. Well, there was this time in which DEC had been authorizing mixing zones for village wastewater systems that were into some known spawning areas. And what this does is say those are considered in the grandfather clause as well. So that's what the three amendments are, and they address the concerns that were raised by DEC. And I'd be happy to answer any questions or if you want further expansion.
Okay, comments or questions from committee members on the bill itself and the amendments? Representative Booth and then Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering if the intention is to adopt the amendments in lieu of a CS for this bill. Do we have the language in a bill before us?
No, we don't. And the bill sponsor kindly offered just to give a general description of the amendments so that when we get into public testimony, those wanting to comment on the bill and the amendments would have some idea what the amendments have pertained to.
Okay.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Seed, is there a definition of commercially operated? I mean, would the Homer sewage treatment plant be considered commercially operated? Anchorage, the one in the Matt Valley, would those be considered commercial even though they're publicly owned? Or what is the definition of a commercially operated plant? Is that someone that you come in and contract it, or what is that? What does that mean?
A commercially operated sewage lagoon would be one in which people pick up material from other sites and bring it in and discharge it for a fee. So it's operated as a commercial entity. It's not a private facility that you are using for your own house or your own farm.
Representative Johnson, before we get to your follow-up, we certainly will have the opportunity to ask Ms. Kent about this as well with
right.
DEC.
I just want a definition of commercial. So under that definition, because the municipality of Anchorage and those other places, Juneau, they do bring in things off-site.
We're just about, hopefully we have Ms. Kent still online, but we're just about ready to turn to Representative Millett for your question of the bill sponsor.
I do. Thank you, Chairman Edgman.
Chairman Edgman, do you want me to wait to respond to Representative Johnson's question until he returns?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton, my question is just a kind of a simple question. I just would like to know if this legislation is reactive or proactive, if there's been a problem with mixing zones previously. Are we trying to protect something, or are we reacting to something that's already been, that's happened?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Millett, we are doing a bit of both. We had legislation previously on mixing zones that before 2002 were identical to this for protection of spawning areas, and you could not discharge and have a mixing zone in a spawning area. That was changed in, I think it was 2003. And so this is reverting back to that previous time, and I just say that, you know, I mean, there has been some concern about mining, and almost every mine in the state was permitted under the previous regulations, not under the 2002 revision onward. The other sections of the bill are proactive. The right to know is something that people, you know, have a right to know what's going into their rivers. So that's, but it's information that is required to be collected anyway. And we have made sure that the requirement on someone that has a permit doesn't kick in until they renew their permit. So there's no time frame in which all of a sudden at the end of this year someone has to go out and start a organizing their information in a different way, or DEC has to have everybody's posted at one time. It would be as those permits are done, then the reporting, which has to be done anyway, but would be done on the form designated by the DEC, so that could be easily posted on their website. And the third one is reactive to the sewage lagoon that happened in my district, and we went through. We had a lot of public comment about it, but there was no public comment period. Permit was issued. Expansion took place. People are really complaining about the odor and
oh, there we go. Got my conference stick sticking.
The odor and those kind of things. And so this is proactive to come in and say, if there's going to be an increase over 50% for one of those privately operated commercial facilities, the public will be notified and they can comment on that expansion. So it's a bit of both. It's proactive and it's also trying to go back to the situation where we were more protective of fish.
Spot on, Representative Millett.
So, Representative Seaton, can you tell me why that? I wasn't here in 2003 when we changed to our current mixing zone statutes. Can you tell me why the mixing zone statutes were lessened in 2003? I don't know the legislative history of why we changed in 2003 to a less restrictive.
In 2002, we'd had an election that came in, and part of the mantra was we want to streamline things. And at that time, we streamlined or lessened, or however you want to say it, a number of things. The coastal zone management, the districts were no longer, under that bill, no longer allowed to qualify habitat or designate habitat, a number of issues that they were no longer able to address. And mixing zones was another thing that was there. There was only one mixing zone that I know of that was a problem at all, and that was Donlin Creek Mine. And Donlin Creek Mine wanted to have a pipe go out into a spawning area. The previous legislation was still in place, and they had to move their pipe 400, I think it was like 400 yards upstream into an area that wasn't a spawning area. And they still conducted, and they still had their mixing zone. They still were able to function. It was just that they had to move their pipe out of the spawning area. And I believe that requirement, people didn't want to have to move their pipe or not put their pipe in the existing spawning area, which was a little closer. And so I think that was the impetus behind it. Maybe DEC can tell you a little
bit. Well, in interjecting the conversation, I think the change was in regulation, and what this bill would do would essentially put change or the standards that once existed in regulation in the statute. Is that correct, Representative Seaton?
Actually, we had
to some extent.
Actually, we had it in the statute.
Yeah.
The prohibition on mixing zones.
Was in statute in 2002? I thought it was regulation.
It was in regulation, yes. Sorry about that. And, the question has come up, should we defer to DEC on all these things? And we have looked at this on when we had the cruise ship, and the legislature said it was appropriate for them, for the legislature in that kind of a context, to look at, and we've established a date by which they need to measure at the end of the pipe. So the legislature taking action to say that we need to protect these things for the public, it's not unheard of, and it has recent history with the cruise ship mixing zones.
Okay. Any additional questions for the bill sponsor, Representative Munoz?
Thank you. The Clean Water Act provides for water quality standards and provides for a comment period on changes that are based on science. And I'm wondering, I'm having a hard time understanding why we need to legislate changes that are currently regulated and under the purview of the Clean Water Act and the Department of Environmental Conservation. And those changes are very much based, or should be based, on science.
Thank you, Representative Nelson, through the chair. Yes, we are not setting the standards. We're not changing those at all. We're just saying that the water of the quality standards that we're talking about are what's allowed to be discharged into waters of the state of Alaska, and those standards are set by DEC. And we've proceeded all along with primacy, so we will have that instead of the EPA. But those water quality standards can't be less than the EPA, but we can have them more stringent. This bill does not change those water standards at all. Those would be set. It just says that when you have water above those standards, it doesn't meet those standards, then you can discharge it into the waters of the state, our public waters, but you have to meet certain conditions. And that is using a mixing zone at a certain area, and you can't have it larger. So we're not changing the standards at all. We're just saying that if you want to exceed those standards, you can't exceed those standards in a spawning area in the river. That's if we're talking about the spawning, the no mixing zone in spawning area, if we're talking about that portion of the bill. So we're not changing the standards at all. We're just saying if you exceed the standards, you can't have a mixing zone in it for exceeding those standards that are set by DEC in a spawning area.
Okay. An entity, a business or municipality, can they now exceed those standards? How is that possible, I guess?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, they can only exceed those standards if they apply for a permit. And that's what these mixing zone permits are. It says, I want to use your public water to exceed the standards that you allow, and please, you know, designate this zone around there so that I mix with your public waters at a water quality that doesn't meet the standards, but it will meet it by the edge of the mixing zone.
Right. Okay.
And this bill says you can continue to do that, you just can't do it in a spawning area. We're protecting fisheries, we're protecting the other resources of the state of Alaska. Our problem has always been this balancing act, and we want to have development, we want to allow that, but we don't want it to impact other resources and other users. So this bill doesn't prevent the discharge of that water, it just says you can't discharge that water and have a mixing zone in a spawning area. That's simply what it does. It doesn't change the standards at all. Those could be set by DEC.
Are there examples of dischargers that are currently allowed in spawning areas? I mean, could you kind of give us an overview of what the climate across the state looks like in terms of?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Munoz. Yes, you have in your packet there a list of a lot of different mixing zones. And there's a lot that this bill specifically exempts. We exempt those that are placer mines. Placer mines, we exempt turbidity. We exempt reporting on things that aren't currently collected, such as acidity, oxygen content, and a number of other things. There are the exemption that we were talking about for grandfathering for wastewater systems that are in spawning areas. Those have been grandfathered in, and we've also, again, grandfathered in. If you are permitted to build a system and it then becomes a spawning area, it cannot be classified with this bill as a spawning area to prevent your mixing zone. So there are mixing zones in spawning areas. What this is to prevent is new mixing zones that are going in to those areas. And like I say, there's a number of exemptions, like for the placer miners and turbidity. Turbidity is used in the interior as a proxy for arsenic, because when you dig up a river and you get a lot of fines in there, and so rather than measure the arsenic, which is related to the fines that are in there, the turbidity is there, but turbidity is exempt from this, this prohibition. So I hope that answers your question. There are mixing zones, and the other things that's exempted is this is only freshwater. Oh. All the marine mixing zones that we have, doesn't matter where what's happening there, this bill does not apply to marine mixing zones at all.
Okay. Representative Keller.
You have an existing mixing zone, and it needs to be upgraded. That would be a new mixing zone. So it would be, it would prevent expansion of the of some of the plants, you know, that are there, right? I was thinking about Palmer. We'd be under one of the exemptions, I think. That's not my area. And I was thinking, in their process of trying to upgrade the system to make sure they're keeping up with the EPA standards, if they needed to expand or change a mixing zone, what would that do to them with your bill?
The useful life exemption for current facilities means that the anticipated time which the facility can continue to be operated without replacement or major renovation. So if they were doing pipe replacements, if they were doing some expansions, those kind of things, those would be covered under the useful life exemption.
I recall. Any additional questions for Representative Seaton? Not seeing any. Ms. Kent, are you still online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman, although it does cut out occasionally.
Okay, well, hopefully you've heard most of the conversation. We've had a number of questions from committee members. We did have a couple of questions from Representative Johnson, who's not here at the moment, but if you wanted to, at this point, just offer some general observations and or attempt to join in on some of the questions, Lynn, please go ahead and put yourself on the record.
Great, thank you. For the record, my name is Lynn Kent. I'm the director for the Water Division at Department of Environmental Conservation. And just a few observations on some of the conversation. The mixing zones are a part of DEC's water quality standards. Mixing zones are allowed under federal law. And to respond about the public, I think it was Representative Munoz who mentioned public process that DEC goes through to revise water quality standards, including the mixing zone regulations. We do have a public review and comment period on all water quality standards revisions. They go through that process, and then once they're adopted by the state, they require a review and approval by the Environmental Protection Agency. The changes that we made to our regulations in 2006 are still pending with EPA for their approval. While that sounds like a very long time, and it is a very long time, their review and approval process often takes many years. Right now we continue to operate under the terms of what we call the old regulations until EPA approves the new ones. Just a few comments on the differences between the old regulations and the new ones. The old ones included a flat-out prohibition on mixing zones and spawning areas for all anadromous fish, not just salmon. So that would include things like lampreys and smelts, as well as spawning areas for 14 listed species, including trout and grayling, and those are the same species that are listed in House Bill 46. When those regs were adopted way back when, long before 2003, there was some recognition that there would need to be exceptions to that flat-out prohibition, but none were included in that rulemaking. The regulations that we adopted in 2006 have retained that prohibition on mixing zones in salmon spawning areas, and the regs only provide for one exception, and that's a similar grandfather clause where if they're authorized to have a mixing zone and fish move in later, salmon move in later, the facility can maintain their mixing zone in a future authorization, so long as they comply with all of the other 19-part test requirements in our regulations for a mixing zone. And that pertains to a domestic wastewater facility or an industrial facility. We didn't, when we adopted those regs, think that there should be special provisions for one and not the other if salmon move into their previously authorized mixing zone. The new regs also have retained the general prohibition on mixing zones and spawning areas for the, again, for the 14 listed species, but we've provided for a couple exemptions. Again, a grandfather provision if fish move in after the mixing zone was first authorized. And the next one is really important. There are certain discharges that contain pollutants or contaminants that don't have an effect on fish. So for those non-salmon areas, DEC under the new regs could authorize a mixing zone in a spawning area if the pollutants were pollutants that don't have an effect on the fish and wouldn't have an impact on future spawning either. So those are the main changes between the regulations. There was some discussion about the public notice requirements during the permitting process, and any permit that is for a discharge to a surface water requires a public notice and comment period, even if the facility is unchanged. That's a little bit different now because DEC has primacy for the permitting program, but every single permit that we issue for a discharge to a surface water requires a public notice and comment period. It's only those facilities that are very small, less than 2,500 gallons, that discharge to the subsurface, so a land, basically a land disposal, that we usually authorize with an engineered plan approval instead of a permit process. Mr. Chairman, I think I'll just pause right there and see if there are questions.
Questions from committee members? Munoz?
Thank you. On page 2 of the bill, it talks about prohibition of mixing zone in spawning waters, including lakes, and one of the listed species is lake trout. Here in our in this community, we have a new mine that was just recently permitted that would allow that allows tailings to be inserted into the Lower Slate Lake. How would this legislation affect that operation? I know that you said that the operations were grandfathered in, but in the future, when they come up for permit review or renewal, how would this change affect that operation?
Representative Munoz, through the chair, that's a very complicated question because the permitting for Lower Slate Lake was done under a different section of the Clean Water Act, under Section 404 for basically disposal of primarily solids materials. That facility does have a permit for discharge from Slate Lake to Lower Slate Creek, and I'm trying to recall the terms of that permit. It's an EPA NPDES, National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit, and I'm not recalling right now if there's a mixing zone associated with that permit or not. I'd be happy to get back to the committee on that, though.
If you could, that's an important point for me, if you would. Thank you.
Representative Seaton, did you want to add to that point?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the point is that the fill there is fill. It's not a water discharge into Slate Lake. Slate Lake is being filled, and the discharge and what is being put in there was classified as fill material. It's not a water discharge permit.
But the tailings do have, I'm sure they include water in the discharge. So that I'm concerned about that point, if we could get more clarification on that.
Len, have you had a chance to maybe do a quick computer search to see whether or not we could answer Representative Munoz's question on the spot, or do you need more time?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to need a little bit more time to grab our staff and the permit for that.
Okay. Additional questions for Ms. Kent, Lynn, I have a question, and that's to ask whether the regulations in place today, do they define salmon mixing zones both temporarily, help me with this word, temporally and spatially?
Mr. Chairman, the new regulations do recognize the longstanding practice at Fish and Game and DNR to look at spawning both as a as an area as well as a timing issue. The new regulations, though, are pretty clear that any mixing zone that's authorized to avoid a spawning area can't have an impact to or spawning timing, I'm sorry, has a restriction so that they can't discharge during spawning, also has requirements that that mixing zone can't have an impact on future spawning. So in other words, they can't discharge something while the fish are not there spawning that's going to have an impact when the fish come back.
So I guess the answer would be in terms of temporal and spatial definitions, would that be an unequivocal yes then? Is that what I'm hearing? Or is that not a clear-cut response?
The answer is yes. And I'm just trying to find the language for you in the regulations.
Okay, thank you. Not seeing any additional questions, Lynn. I don't know if you're able to stay online, but we do have some public testimony coming up.
Yes, I'll stay online, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, because we have some questions that arise from the public testimony. And with that, we've got a few people online, so I'm going to start there. In Nome, we have Toby Shields. Toby, can you identify yourself for the record, please, and offer your testimony?
Hit it when I talk. Okay, my name is Toby Shield. I live here in Nome. I work for Nome Joint Utility System. Just a couple questions real quickly on Section 3 on page 3, lines 23 through 28. Line 25 says that will result in an increase of discharge of volume more than 50%. Is that actually an increase from what's happened before? I was under the impression if you modified your permit much more than 10%, it had to go to public testimony. And then the second question is line 26 when it says from the volume originally authorized. Is that the design? What did it was designed for, or if there's been modifications to it, would it be the previous permit? In other words, if I wanted to increase something 50% from the existing permit, would that have to go through the public testimony? And is that 50% an increase from the 10%? I was under the impression that was current.
Toby, I'm going to ask the bill sponsor to come forward, Representative Seaton, and see if we can address these questions. And if not, we have Ms. Kent online.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this was part of Representative Johnson's question about commercially. Municipal wastewater sewage plants have different regulations than the commercially, privately operated, commercially operated sewage lagoons and or waste disposal sites for pumping septic tanks is what we're basically talking about. Mostly here, and this 50% is a 50% expansion, or more than a 50% expansion of these privately, commercially operated disposal facilities, and that's where the public comment comes in. Not doesn't really deal with the municipal wastewater system.
Okay. Any additional comments, Lynn, that you want to offer?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just a reminder that any permit for a discharge to a surface water, even a renewal of that permit, will undergo a public review.
Okay, thank you. Representative Seaton?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to draw your attention to the letter that we have from Renee Evans of DEC Yes, and it's on the Homer Honeybear septic disposal facility, And on that page in there, you'll see that it's it went from 1,500 gallons a day to 6,000 gallons per day. And so, and there was no public notice, and there was no public comment, and there was none available, even though that was requested. So we have a disparity between what's done with other permits and what this was, because here it's stating that ADEC staff reviewed the records of the facility, and then it goes through that, and it gives you the 1,500 gallons a day, and then went to 6,000 gallons a day, and this was allowed, and there was objection from the local residents, and it's still being allowed at 6,000 gallons per day, which was way more than a 50% expansion from the 1,500 gallons a day, which was approved to allow that average. So this bill will clarify for everyone what the procedure will be, and if there's public notice, that will be great. It has not happened in my district in this precise situation, and those are the gallonage.
Ms. Kent, comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe you also have in your packet an April 9th letter from me, April 9, 2009, clarifying the situation at the Honey Bear facility. I think it's now known as the Homer Septic Services Sewage Lagoon. That's a facility that is does not discharge to surface water. It's a lagoon-type system. They received a permit a long time ago from DEC to discharge 1,500 gallons per day. Again, that's to the subsurface into these lagoons. It appears that there have been some upgrades to that facility over the years. And when we worked with them last spring and this summer, we actually sent an inspector out there to check out the facility this summer. The average daily discharge to that facility is just over 1,600 gallons per day. And that, yes, that's an exceedance of their permit, and they are working with an engineer to produce as-built designs for us to review and approve and ensure that that facility can handle the increased discharge. But they have not, at this point, sought an increase to discharge 6,000 gallons per day. It's the department's policy right now that for very small discharges to the subsurface, less than 2,500 gallons per day, that we generally authorize those with a what's called a plan review in lieu of a permit, and that's allowed under our regulations. It's an engineered plan design for a very small, low-risk facility, and we ensure that it will protect nearby surface waters and groundwater and authorize those facilities. So those very small facilities with plan review in lieu of a permit do not go through a public notice, but they are also not discharging to a surface water.
Okay, I want obviously to get the appropriate amount of discussion on this issue, but not to belabor it. And with that, Mr. Shields, does that conclude your testimony? Are you still online, Toby? If not, I'm going to move on to Homer, Bob Shavelson. Please put yourself on the record and offer your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Shavelson. I'm the executive director at Cook and Lake Keeper. We're a nonprofit organization with approximately 1,200 members in South Central Alaska, focused on water quality and fish habitat issues. We've been involved in the mixing zone issue since it reared its head in 2003. I believe Mr. Seaton was rather diplomatic in some of the changes we saw then. We perceived the whole notion of streamlining as simply an effort to roll back some very important protections. We saw our coastal management program go from one of the most acclaimed programs in the nation down to almost the bottom in the nation. And the mixing zone rollback was part of that effort. Thousands of Alaskans spoke out at that time against that. The Murkowski administration went through two rulemakings. It was such a contentious issue. People understood that toxics and fish habitat didn't mix. And it comes down to a basic notion, and the Clean Water Act can get fairly complicated, but mixing zones embrace the idea that dilution is the solution to pollution. and they are used repeatedly throughout the nation, throughout the state. I heard previously it said they're allowed under federal law. Nowhere does the Clean Water Act state the term mixing zones. They are a fiction that was created through rulemaking because Congress, when they passed the Clean Water Act in 1972, wanted discharge pollutants to meet a discharge standard. At the end of a discharge pipe, you reissue a permit every 5 years, technology improves, you ratchet down pollution, and ultimately, through advanced technology, you get to zero discharge. Mixing zones turn that whole thing on its head. And they are basically the exception that has swallowed the rule, and they are why the Clean Water Act has largely not met its promise, and while these have now become simply permits to pollute rather than permits that decrease pollution to our fisheries and our nation's waters. I think it's imperative that we have a bright line test for not discharging toxics into our fish streams. I wanted to address a comment that I heard from Representative Munoz earlier as to why we wouldn't simply leave this to EPA and go through that process there. And I would just point out that Region 10 of the EPA, which is where Alaska is and Oregon and Washington, California and Idaho, those other four states have salmon on the endangered species list. And we don't, because Alaska has taken pride in its fisheries management. I think we've done things differently up here. I don't think we should follow the lead of the federal government. I think we should embrace our state's rights, and we should have more proactive protections here for our fisheries. One of the problems that you get into if you don't have a statutory change here is that you leave it to discretion, and discretion always has a way of creating problems. And I'll point to the example in marine waters, but it's such an extreme example, I think it's fitting. And that's the Trading Bay facility in Cook Inlet, and that's where oil and gas separation occurs. I'll wrap up in 1 second here, but in any case, that permit has a mixing zone that's over a mile across. So you've got a mile where you say that we're not going to meet the fishable and swimmable standards of the Clean Water Act in there. That permit went through a couple years ago. The volume of toxics was actually tripled under that permit, and there's a lot of ways you can jigger this stuff to make it look good. And what they decided to do was, instead of reinjecting the waste, which they're capable of doing, they just put a shower head essentially, a diffuser on the end of it, so you would spread it out more. So I only use that example as one that where discretion becomes a problem. And I'll wrap up by just saying we aren't immune from impacts to our fisheries. We just have not had the pressures that we've seen in the lower 48 in Canada, but I'd encourage everybody to look at the Fraser River in British Columbia. They had world-class red salmon fishery, 37 million fish returning to that area within the past 20 years. In the past 10 years, that fishery has collapsed, and it's been because of short-sighted development. I'd encourage everybody to recognize we're not immune from that. This HB 46 is one thing that we can do to help ensure that we have fisheries for the future. And I'd be happy to take any questions if there are any.
Questions for Mr. Shailson? Not seeing any. Thank you for your testimony, Bob. I think we've got one more individual online. Looking at the list here, and that is Jerry McCutcheon. Jerry, are you there? Jerry McCutcheon, not hearing an affirmative. I'm going to assume that we have essentially, at that point, let me just double check here in the room. Do we have anyone who wishes to testify on House Bill 46 in the committee room itself? Not seeing any, and not hearing any more need for those online to testify. At this point, I'm going to close public testimony, bring the bill sponsor back to the table, and we do have three amendments in front of us. We also have a couple of committee members who are going to be back at some point here.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton?
Yes, I'd just like to answer one of the questions that was asked, and that was about mixing zones. And in the DEC's outfall 001 discharge of mine water to Sherman Creek, that was the effluent limitations and monitoring of frequency for the parameters contained in Table 1 of the permit final, and no mixing zone is authorized. And outfall 002, which is discharge of tailings effluent water from tailings storage facility to east fork of Slate Creek, the same thing as gives Table 3 for the preliminary final permit, and no mixing zone is authorized. So they have, DEC, through their permitting process, has gone through this, and no mixing zone is authorized in either of those. And so I presume, since everything is going forward, that there was no mixing zone needed for those, because the procedure is going forward in both the both those creeks. And this is from DEC. So I think that was the answer that you were requesting, whether there was a mixing zone for Kensington, and they have not authorized that.
Lynn, did you want to comment on that or offer any additional thoughts?
No, I had somebody here trying to track down a copy of the permit, but that does sound accurate to me.
Reps and Munoz, does that satisfy your question?
I would like confirmation from the department that that is indeed the case.
Okay, happy to do that.
Thank you.
Well, we do have a couple of committee members who are absent. I think it might be appropriate just to ask the very general and obvious question, whether the department or the governor's office or somebody in the administration whether there's an expressed opinion on the bill. I mean, is it neutral? Is it opposition, supportive? Lynn, I think we've heard sort of implicitly that there's concerns, or that maybe there isn't a need for the legislation from the department's point of view, but explicitly, does the department have a position on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, we haven't taken a firm position on the bill because right now there are a lot of provisions that we think are unclear and duplicative with things that are already in place.
Okay. Well, we have finished public testimony. We have heard from the bill sponsor, and we have addressed a number of committee questions. At the quarter after the hour, normally we would go till the top of the hour. I'm missing two committee members, both who've asked to be here during the presentation of the amendments. So with that, Representative Seaton, I think I'm going to conclude the meeting today, and we will bring the bill up at some future time, sometime, and if not next week, sometime soon after. So we'll conclude the discussion. So not hearing any more business from the committee, Representative Book.
Mr. Chairman, when we reconvene, will the amendments be included in the bill as a CS, as far as having the information included in the same bill?
It was the chair's intent to deal with the amendments individually.
Okay.
Representative Seaton.
The committee has the bill, and you can deal with that however the committee chooses, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. With that, the meeting will be adjourned at 11:15.